got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. As a high school student, you probably learned that the brain is generally considered to be made of three parts, the cerebrum, the cerebellum, and the brainstem. You may also have learned about it in more detail, such as the general purposes of each of the lobes of the cerebrum, such as the frontal, parietal, temporal, and occipital.
There are also additional portions, such as the basal ganglia, thalamus, corpus callosum, pons, and mammillary body, among several others.
But memorizing the names is really not important here. Understanding how the brain works is way more important to both you and the scientists, as well as physicians, psychologists, and others that help you with your health and welfare, among other things. The brain serves many functions, gives meaning to things that happen in the world surrounding us. It does this through the use of our five senses. You know, sight, smell, hearing, tooth.
The brain controls your thought, your memory, and speech, as well as arm and leg movements. It also controls the functioning of many organs within your body.
Not only that, but the brain also determines how you respond to stressful situations, such as taking an exam, reacting to the loss of a job, birth of a child, or even how you react to an illness. To a great degree, it regulates the beating of your heart and even how fast you breathe in different situations.
The weight of the brain changes from birth through adulthood. At birth, the average brain weighs about 1 pound and grows to about 2 pounds during childhood. The average weight of an adult female brain is about 2.7 pounds, while the brain of an adult male weighs about 3 pounds. Not much weight for an organ that does so much for us.
Nervous system is commonly divided into the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. The central nervous system consists of the brain and its cranial nerves, as well as the spinal cord. It travels down the back within the vertebrae of the backbones. The peripheral nervous system, on the other hand, is composed of the spinal nerves that branch from the spinal cord and the autonomous nervous system, which is again divided into the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. Now, we'll get to those later if time permits. The brain is really made up of just two types of cells, neurons and glial cells.
Neuron or nerve cell is responsible for sending and receiving nerve impulses or signals. But the glial cells are quite important. They provide support and nutrition to the brain. They also form myelin, which helps facilitate and speed up transmission of signals through the nerve cells.
In the human brain, glial cells outnumber neurons by about 50 to 1. Glial cells are also the most common cells found in primary brain tumors.
Just as the skin covers our bodies and protects it from environmental harm, the brain is housed inside the bony covering called the cranium, which protects the brain from most injuries.
Brain tissue has additional layers surrounding it for protection. These are called the meninges, which consist of three layers of tissue that cover and protect the brain and spinal cord. The outermost layer is the dura mater, followed by the arachnoid, and finally, the innermost layer called the pia mater. The dura mater, in fact, is made up of two layers. The outer layer is called the periosteum, while the inner layer, or dura, lines the inside of the entire skull and creates little folds or compartments in which parts of the brain are protected and secured. That's what gives the brain its, well, convoluted look.
One large fold actually divides the brain into the right and left hemisphere. Then there is the arachnoid layer, which is separated from the dura by a space called the subdural space.
An arachnoid membrane covers the entire brain, and it's made up of delicate, elastic tissue and blood vessels of varying sizes. Finally, we have the pia mater, which is the membrane that most closely covers the brain. It also has many blood vessels that reach deep into the surface of the brain. The space between that separates the arachnoid and the pia is called the subarachnoid space. It's within this area that the cerebrospinal fluid flows.
One of the main protections for the brain against trauma is the CSF, or cerebrospinal fluid, that surrounds the brain and the spinal cord.
It is not a stagnant fluid, but one that is constantly being absorbed and replenished. If you've ever seen an MRI or even a picture of the brain, you might have noticed that there are clear areas within. These are called ventricles, and it is here that the cerebrospinal fluid is produced.
Each ventricle has a choroid plexus within it. It is the structure that produces the CSF. Pressure within the fluid is usually very constant, as the same amount that is produced is also absorbed.
There are really four ventricles in the brain. Two of these, called the lateral ventricles, connect to a third ventricle, which is in the center of the brain. Its walls are made up of the thalamus and hypothalamus. And finally, the third ventricle connects with the fourth through a long tube that's called the aqueduct of Sylvius, through which the CSF flows into the fourth ventricle, flows around the brain and the spinal cord, bypassing through another series of openings.
So far, we have been talking about the large part of the brain that most of us consider the brain itself. But there is also a brainstem, which is the lower extension of the brain, located in front of the cerebellum, and itself is connected to the spinal cord.
There's a lot more anatomy that we could talk about, but suffice it to say that many simple or primitive functions that are essential for survival are located right here in the brainstem.
The midbrain is an important center for ocular motion, while the other part of the brainstem, called the pons, is involved with coordinating eye and facial movements, facial sensation, hearing, as well as balance.
The medulla oblongata, that controls breathing, blood pressure, heart rhythms, and swallowing. Also other processes that we don't have to think about.
This whole area is vital to our life. Messages from the cortex to the spinal cord and nerves that branch from the spinal cord are sent through the pons and the brainstem. The extraction of these regions of the brain will cause brain death, because without these key functions, humans cannot survive.
We're now getting to some areas of the brain that you may not have heard of, but are really vital to our lives. One is the reticular activating system, and this is found in the midbrain, pons, medulla, and part of the thalamus. It controls levels of wakefulness, enables people to pay attention to their environments, and is involved in sleep patterns. Now, there are 12 cranial nerves, of which 10 originate in the brainstem. Now, these control hearing, facial sensations, taste, swallowing, and movements of the neck, face, shoulders, and the tongue muscles, as well as eye movement. Notice that I said eye movement, not vision. The nerves for vision, as well as smell, stem from the cerebrum.
The cerebellum is located at the back of the brain beneath the occipital lobes. It helps fine-tune motor activity or movement, such as the fine movements of fingers as they perform surgery or paint a picture.
It also helps one maintain posture, sense of balance, or equilibrium by controlling the tone of muscles and the position of limbs. The cerebellum is also important in one's ability to perform rapid and repetitive actions, such as, well, playing a video game. In the cerebellum, right-sided abnormalities produce symptoms on the same side of the body.
At the beginning of the show, we concentrated on the main brain that is encased in the skull. This is called the cerebrum. It is made up of a right and a left side called hemispheres.
There is one area that both hemispheres connect, and that is at the very bottom of the structure, in an area called the corpus callosum.
The surface of the cerebrum contains billions of neurons and glia that together form the cerebral cortex.
Cerebral cortex is often called the gray matter because, well, it's gray in color.
The case of scientific research have revealed the specific functions of the various regions of the brain. beneath the cerebral cortex or surface of the brain. Connecting fibers between neurons form a white color area called the white matter.
Messages within the brain are delivered in many ways. The signals are transported along routes called pathways. Any destruction of brain tissue by a tumor can disrupt the communication between different parts of the brain. The result will, of course, be loss of function, such as speech, the ability to read, or the ability to follow simple spoken commands. Messages can travel from one bulge on the brain to another, from one lobe to another, from one side of the brain to the other, from one lobe of the brain to structures that are found deep in the brain like the thalamus that we mentioned earlier, or from the deep structures of the brain to another region in the central nervous system.
Research has determined that touching one side of the brain sends electrical signals to the other side of the body. Touching the motor region on the right side of the brain would cause the opposite side or the left side of the body to move.
Stimulating the left primary motor cortex would cause the right side of the brain to move. The messages from movement and sensation cross to the other side of the brain and cause the opposite limb to move or feel a sensation. Except in two specific instances that we also mentioned earlier, the right side of the brain controls the left side of the body and vice versa. So if a brain tumor occurs on the right side of the brain that controls the movement of the arm, the left arm may be weak or paralyzed.
There is a pretty easy way to memorize all 12 cranial nerves by name using a special rhyme that most medical students first learn in med school. If you would like to hear it, call our Southside Medical Center office at 641-4411 and our staff will be happy to recite it for you.
The left hemisphere side of the brain is responsible for language and speech, while the right hemisphere plays a large part in interpreting visual information and spatial processing. In just about one-third of individuals who are left-handed, speech function may be located on the right side of the brain. So left-handed individuals may need specialized testing to determine if their speech center is on the left or the right side prior to any surgery in that area.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Some people say that they can have brain overload. Now that we have spent half of this show on the brain, maybe we have gotten to that point. So let's get on today with some recent medical news.
Now, we've talked about the gut microbiome on many shows and how important it can be to our health. So a new study done by scientists is quite interesting in that it shows that ultraviolet light exposure leads to changes in the gut microbiome, not in everyone, only in those with a deficiency in vitamin D.
These days, milk is almost always fortified with vitamin D, and the reason dates back to the 1900s. At the turn of the century, rickets was rampant. This is a childhood bone disorder that can lead to weak and soft bone, stunted growth, and sometimes skeletal deformities. It was due to a deficiency in vitamin D.
But nowadays, with the increase in specialized milks and milk substitutes that do not contain the added vitamin D, one must really be careful to get enough of this vitamin. There's plenty of evidence that links vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, to health outcomes.
Living at higher latitudes means less exposure to UV light and a greater chance of being vitamin D deficient. It also carries a higher risk of developing diseases such as multiple sclerosis and inflammatory bowel disease.
Research into the gut microbiome indicates that our microbial passengers may play a significant part in these conditions. But what links vitamin D to our intestinal microbiota.
The theme of research, many from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, set out to answer this question by studying how the gut microbiome responds to UV light.
Volunteers who were deficient in vitamin D received 3 sessions of UVB exposure. Their gut microbiomes changed and bore the same hallmarks as those of the study participants who were not vitamin D deficient.
The authors found significant changes in the microbial composition in the group that had been mostly vitamin D insufficient at the start of the experiment.
Before the UVB exposure, the women in the study had a less diverse and balanced gut microbiome than those taking regular vitamin D supplements. And UVB exposure boosted the richness and evenness of the microbiome to levels really indistinguishable from the supplemented group whose microbiome was not significantly changed. I know you probably do not like hearing the names of these sometimes difficult to pronounce bacteria, but Firmicutes and Proteobacteria increased and Bacteroidetes decreased, bringing their levels in line with the microbiomes of participants who had taken vitamin D supplements.
In fact, in the study, it was found that vitamin D production was the main cause of the shift in the microbiome. Unfortunately, it is really hard to obtain enough vitamin D from diet alone. So you can get a supplement of vitamin D during that winter, since your body is very efficient in making vitamin D from sunlight in the summer.
Another study in the news this week concerns sleep. Many of us know that we don't get enough sleep, but we may not know the many adverse effects of this lack of rest.
Studies have shown that during sleep, the brain reactualizes updating memories and clearing up waste. New research in mouse models suggests that specialized immune cells keep the brain in good working order by maintaining it during sleep.
New research in mice, that's right, mice, I know we always use those for our research, shows that immune cells are better able to perform maintenance work on the brain during sleep. Research conducted over the past few years has uncovered evidence that the brain gets a chance to refresh and update in many ways during sleep. For instance, the brain consolidates newly formed memories during your sleep time. They've also discovered that sleep provides an excellent opportunity to rid the brain of, well, let's call it, neural trash.
A team of researchers from the University of Rochester Medical Center in New York and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge has discovered more about how brain maintenance also occurs during sleep.
Researchers worked with mice to find out more about how microglia, which are the immune cells that service the brain, perform their maintenance work during sleep. It has largely been assumed that the dynamic movement of microglial processes is not sensitive to the behavioral state of the animal, and that's explained by the study's lead author, Professor Ania Majewska.
The research indicated that the signals in our brain that modulate the sleep and awake state also act as a switch that turns the immune system off and on.
Now, we mentioned the microglia. These are the immune cells that respond to any signs of infection or damage in the brain. These cells are also active during sleep. In fact, the new study suggests that microglia may work more effectively during sleep than when an individual is awake.
During sleep, norepinephrine levels in the brain are low. Remember that norepinephrine is a neurotransmitter substance. When norepinephrine levels spike, however, the brain becomes suddenly alert and the individual wakes up.
In the current study, the researchers observed that norepinephrine acts on the nerves and a particular receptor site called the beta 2 adrenergic receptor, which is present in the microglia. When norepinephrine levels become elevated, the microglia, well, they apparently fall into a state of slumber.
This meant that during states of arousal and wakefulness, the immune cells could not respond appropriately and perform maintenance on brain cell connections.
Additionally, the findings demonstrate that mechanisms related to sleep play an essential role in ensuring that the brain receives necessary repairs and continues to function correctly. Moreover, it may help explain why sleep disturbances have links to the onset of progressive neurodegenerative conditions such as dementia and Parkinson's disease. Well, you come home from a hard day's work or play and you feel sleepy. Well, that's normal. However, excessive sleepiness can be disruptive and make it difficult for a person to go about their normal daily activity.
Of course, the sleepiness may be simply due to lack of sleep, but there are other causes. In some cases, excessive sleepiness may be due to a sleep disorder or another underlying health condition.
Did you know that 10 to 20% of people deal with excessive sleepiness to some degree? The American Academy of Sleep Medicine stated that adults need between 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night to feel alert and well-rested the following day. But around 20% of adults fail to get enough sleep.
Insomnia is a sleep condition in which people have difficulty sleeping. It can take several forms. You can have difficulty getting to sleep or remaining asleep, as many who suffer insomnia wake up many times during their sleep period.
Treatment for insomnia may involve several therapies, including drugs in the form of sedative, hypnotic medications, and even antidepressants. Treatment can also include behavioral techniques to promote regular sleep.
There is also a disorder called sleep apnea, where a person temporarily stops breathing during sleep. It is a relatively common cause of excessive daytime sleepiness.
There are two types of sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea and central sleep apnea.
Obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA, occurs when the soft tissue in the back of the throat collapses, blocking the airflow, while central sleep apnea, or CSA, occurs when the brain fails to signal to the respiratory muscle to breathe.
Some people can even experience mixed sleep apnea, which is a combination of the OSA and CSA. Common symptoms of sleep apnea include very loud snoring and gasping for air throughout the night. During an episode of sleep apnea, a person's body becomes temporarily starved of oxygen. Now, this lack of oxygen can lead to other issues, such as an irregular heartbeat. And over time, this can lead to serious chronic conditions, such as high blood pressure and heart disease.
Sleep apnea commonly occurs when a person is overweight. When this is the case, weight loss will be the first recommended treatment.
Good treatments include the use of positive airway pressure devices, which consists of a machine that attaches to a mask, which the person wears over their face. The machine supplies pressurized air into a person's throat while they sleep. The air prevents the throat from collapsing.
Other oral appliances include mouth guards or other orthodontic appliances which hold the lower jaw forward slightly during sleep. This positioning prevents the soft tissues in the back of the throat from collapsing and blocking the airways.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.